Welcome back to Decoding the Industrial Revolution, the podcast where we explore the innovations shaping our future. I'm your host, Arvind Sareen, and today we have a remarkable guest whose expertise in strategic quality planning, global supply chain management, and sustainability is transforming industries. As the Chief Operating Officer of Clarity, she's at the forefront of commercializing groundbreaking water technology to eliminate PFAS contaminants, driving innovation and continuous improvement. Recognized as a LinkedIn top product engineering voice in 2024, she is celebrated for her transformational leadership and ability to align data-driven strategies with organizational goals. Please join me in welcoming the distinguished Pamela Geisen Lynch. Welcome to the podcast, Pamela, and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Arvind. I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, great. I'm so excited about this discussion with you. So I'd like to begin, if you wouldn't mind sharing a bit of your journey to becoming a chief operating officer, including the pivotal moments or experiences that shaped your career trajectory.
Sure. Great. So I graduated with a degree in chemical engineering, and I went on to do General Electric's Operations Management Leadership Program. So I was immediately thinking of operations management and how to get in there and really solve some technical problems. After spending some time doing the Operational Management Leadership Program and rolling off and working in chemicals and plastics plants, I realized I wanted to roll my sleeves up and do something different, more in a startup company and have more of an impact on the renewable energy or at the time, alternative energy side. So I got recruited to work for a battery company. And I worked at a startup company working on batteries for electric vehicles. So this is really where some of the immediate times where I was starting to work on batteries for electric vehicles and go through the design and manufacturing and scale up. I got to test drive a car that had our batteries in it, which was very cool. After that startup, got to go on and work on some wind turbines, worked for another materials company. And at the wind turbine company, again, going through that design and bringing a product to life and climbing to the top of that wind turbine and being with the team and actually seeing that come to life is so exciting. Wow. So between kind of some of my different experiences of engineering, growing teams, operations, working on supply chain and quality, which I'm sure we'll talk more about, then going to work at a Clarity and really doing kind of the engineering, product commercializing, and growing the team for the chief operating officer has been a really exciting journey.
Well, congratulations. No, it sounds super fantastic. And I see that theme around renewable and, of course, sustainability, and can't wait to get more into that eventually. But this is very exciting, and congratulations. So, but what initially sparked your interest in strategic quality planning, on global supply chain management and sustainability, and how have these passions evolved throughout your career?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the more I learn, the more I want to get in and learn more. But I would say, you know, what really draws me in is the challenge and that belief that there's a solution to any problem. We just have to get together as a team and figure it out. So really working on teams to solve, you know, tough challenges. If you think about some of the climate problems, those are really relevant to our time. So I love being a part of that and bringing teams together and then thinking about how that impacts the whole community. So definitely having that community impact and having the overall, you know, bringing the team together to deliver a product that solves a customer pain point is just a lot of fun. That's really what drives me and has continued to spark my interest.
Lovely, lovely. The impact, I mean, of course, super important. And I like how you've got such unique experiences, and as you shared, like climbing on top of a wind turbine, that's super super thrilling and adventurous too. Is there an elevator that takes you all the way on the top, or you have some sort of stairs?
Sometimes they have lifts in them, but no, the one I went up did not. So I climb and take a break, right?
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of good workout. You know, I went to Asia's largest wind turbine, I think that's in Tamil Nadu when I was in India. And I mean, it was just the sight of looking at so many wind turbines and the beautiful sunset was amazing. And You know, I was thinking, like, you know, of course, that's one of the very important technologies, but then there are so many more initiatives, you know, in solar. I have a lot of friends, you know, who work in that field. However, sometimes in chemical engineering, it's associated with, you know, going, at least at Texas A&M, when I was getting my master's in electrical engineering, all of my chemical engineering friends were looking at oil and natural gas. And, you know, especially because of being in Texas, they were wanting to go to Houston. And then that's where they wanted to, you know, find a job at one of the oil and gas companies. But you chose a different path, you know, because of that sustainability aspect and the rotational program at GE. It's fantastic. So in various roles that you've managed, like global supplier quality, led sustainability initiatives, and champion innovation, how do you balance these diverse responsibilities, and what strategies do you employ to ensure that alignment with organizational goals?
Yeah, good question. You know, it is really key that we have clear missions, clear goals, and we can cascade those too. And then also thinking about different teams. So one of the things I love to do with teams is Clifton Strengths Finder. So we know all of the strengths of all the teammates, and we can really play to those strengths to work as a high-performing team or an effective team to really get the best results. I think of bringing the team together, we do things, we do them now, I've done them at prior companies, about the idea generation and the innovation and keeping that really open culture. And so people will continue to bring ideas forward through team summits, through crazy idea sessions, really going around the room and having open forums. So all ideas are welcome. And then really how we're going to down select and figure it out. So really believing that all voices kind of need to be brought forward to get the best possible outcome. And I really think that is how, you know, yeah, you need to have kind of where's the mission, where's the strategy, where are you going? But you need to get inputs from everyone on the team and really to drive that innovation and move it forward. Otherwise, really, you're having one top-down approach. And so when it comes to balancing all of these initiatives, there are people that are working directly on the floor, working out in the field with customers. They really see a lot more sometimes than, or have a different perspective. Totally. So we find it's really important to bring all the different ideas forward. I've loved some of these experiences of managing global teams, because again, you have the global perspective and you have different people around the world having different viewpoints and ideas of what is most important, what are the constraints, what are the risks, and how do we think about those as we iterate on our product, as we get solutions out there, and then having this fail fast forward effect of bringing a product to market, getting it out there, getting it to customers, iterating on that as fast as possible to really have some positive impact based on the goals and the mission of the company, what we're trying to achieve in the world.
That's lovely. No, I think not only is it important for startups, but it's important for larger organizations as well to fail fast, fail forward, and creating a culture where you're listening to all of the different stakeholders, and especially the customer, the end user. I mean, even when we're creating solutions, you know, at Copper, we're always trying to be customer centric. So if you can empathize, because I mean, of course, the best way is to talk to the user. But if you cannot talk to the user, then the other alternative, you know, that I'd like to say is to get in the shoes of the user and do that exercise. And of course, if you're getting input from all of these variety of different roles, you know, people who are talking to the customer, who are on the field, they're going to come up with ideas that are important from that perspective. And it's, you know, that's what's going to create those robust solutions and increase reliability, of course, drive innovation. And no one should be reprimanded for bringing ideas or sharing their opinion. So I think those are the qualities that you highlighted are, you know, like not so common, but are common across a lot of successful companies. And so that's lovely. And thank you for sharing that. So you do all these things at Clarity. Maybe for our audience, it'll be good to understand what Aclarity does and also some insights into Aclarity's mission and vision, and maybe even how your leadership has contributed to achieving those goals and the mission and vision.
Yeah, thanks. So Aclarity is a water technology and services company, and we're on a mission to destroy PFAS forever. And PFAS are per and poly four alkyl substances that have come off of a variety of products, right? They were made, and they had great properties around chemical resistant, water resistant, and now it's ubiquitous. It is everywhere around us. And actually 95% of people have PFAS in their blood. And so we are out there working on liquid waste, water, and other forms to destroy PFAS. So to date, honestly, you'd put a filter in place. You think about a home filter for your water. There are large removal methods or filtration methods that would remove the PFAS. And removal, though, really, you now have PFAS on granular activated carbon or some kind of filtration. And then you might move that to a landfill, and then that could get in the water stream again. So Aclarity believes if we can break that cycle, then we can really go more upstream, work with industrial providers, work with landfills, wastewater treatment plants, and really just break that cycle to destroy the PFAS instead of removing it and moving it around. And that's what we're on a mission to do. So if you think about it, what are we doing? We're pioneering new technologies, and we're safeguarding communities and ensuring healthy environments for ourselves and for everybody every day. So that's part of what we're about. We have our core values, which we try to live to, around collaboration, grit, innovation, integrity, positivity. And so, again, we're trying to bring that forward, give our customers the benefit of the doubt, and say, hey, we're here to partner with you and help solve the problems. So we're a startup company, but we have kind of gone through, and we have now full-scale deployments where we have reactors that destroy the PFAS. We have different trailers that can go around and do mobile field deployments. We also have a full-scale skid at a customer site that's actively destroying PFAS that has 8 reactors on it, which is very exciting. So part of, since I came on board a couple of years ago, we had a single anode and cathode reactor, and now we actually have a commercialized product that is in trailers and full scale. So part of my role has been around growing that team, growing that technical team, but going from around, 5 to almost, nearly 30 people, and also working on some of the partnerships, working on with our field operations, working with our engineering team, product team, supply chain, all the areas, developing kind of organizational development and really increasing some of the systems and processes of our team. It's funny, I was chatting with someone just the other day, and she said, I remember when you started at the company, we were talking about how many people, and you said 5, and my friend assumed it was like 5,000. I was like, no, 5 people.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes to show, you go in and then you think about, oh, we doubled again. But really, it's bringing the team on that journey. It's going out and working with customers. It's then partnering with strategic partners and figuring out how the two partners can come together and actually create more value than if someone just said, I'm going to work with you and I'm going to work with you. So we've got to work together and actually create more value, create it through the value chain, create it through the supply chain with sustainable solutions, really break that waste cycle. Think about water and water quality, right? There's a lot of, water impact, water scarcity issues throughout the world. 40% of the world, 40% of the world's population is affected by water scarcity. So thinking about how do you really go in there and solve some of these really key climate issues.
Totally.
That's what we're on a mission to do.
Lovely. No, thank you for sharing that. That's wonderful. I think there's just so much to unpack there. But let me ask. So I read a lot about PFAS as well, and it was recently in the news as well. There were some, you know, new data that had come out. It was on NBC News, and you know, that's kind of my daily digest that I, you know, make sure even when I'm traveling, I'm just watching. Just makes me feel more connected, you know, to the States. And so PFAS is already there, and it's, you mentioned it's in our blood as well. So how is it harmful for human beings, and what can be done to remove it from our blood, I guess? Is there a way, or is that invented yet?
Yeah, we talk a lot about this, although I'm going to say I'm not an expert in all of this. Yeah, it does bioaccumulate. It does cause cancer. There are a lot of impacts around unborn babies, around our systems. So there are a lot of things you can read around this. And our team does kind of, because we're curious, right, attend different webinars and follow some different studies with universities about how, you know, what is the next thing? Are we going to be ingesting some kind of binder that's going to help it pass through our body? It isn't totally clear, you know, how you can do that right now, right? So
got it. And so your strategy is to partner with wherever PFAS is produced, and then trying to like destroy that. And how do you do that?
Yeah. So right. So where there's industrial wastewater treatment, or where there's landfills, and they have the landfill leachate, which is the liquid that comes off of it, we can go in with our reactors, electrochemical oxidation reactors, and we can destroy. So power goes into it, and then the liquid waste flows through in a continuous way, and it zaps the bonds that are known as, you know, the strongest bonds in human, in the world. And so the electricity zaps the bonds. And that's kind of how it
breaks out the compound. So then it's
into benign constituents. So we've been able to demonstrate that in the field with different water streams over and over again.
So amazing. And, you know, this is fantastic of a business model as well. And of course, with sustainability in mind, with purpose to align everybody. And what I've, you know, come to learn is that you've been able to commercialize this and, you know, in a breakthrough technology. Like, what are some of the challenges that you encountered while, you know, commercializing this technology, and how have you overcome them?
Yeah, there are always challenges, right? So I have been in different markets when we're bringing new technologies to market where there's kind of an incumbent solution that is, some might say, the most proven. So it isn't the most advanced technology, but it has the most data. And companies are sometimes very risk averse. So when you're bringing something forward that is a new technology, there's a lot of skepticism. And you really have to work closely to provide the data, to do some calculated risks, and to understand really how do you get kind of that product out there, and again, iterate with the customer's feedback. So getting the pilot trailers out there, doing pilots, working with customers, and just improving that. And there were supply chain issues, like many people over the past few years have had impacts on supply chain issues.
Totally.
You kind of work through that. But it's around that customer adoption and working through the hurdles, and then helping to have a couple things, right? They need the data and the performance that it works. They need to have a good relationship with the company and really trust us. And they need to make sure that it does meet their needs. And, you know, if we're working with another business, they know that their customers or their stakeholders are going to be having a good experience with this as well. So definitely, you know, anytime you're bringing new technology, it is not without challenges, but really just, you know, resiliency, asking the questions, getting to the root cause, and just kind of driving it through and being tenacious about it.
Totally. And, you know, thinking about it in an analytical way as well, because you could think about, like, why would they say no if you show them the benefit, if you do the pilot? I love the strategy of, like, of course, you got to build the trust and, you know, you got to do the pilot. You have to understand their needs. And I think it's common across a lot of different initiatives. Like, even for us, we're a digital transformation company. You know, we could do anything from creating a mobile app and a web app to all the way creating like an intelligent automation process where maybe you have your HR induction, you know, that's happening through manually sending out emails, or your performance review, you know, doing it on an Excel and then trying to find it and then filling out your goals and forms. I mean, even for larger companies, I think, you know, that just is a no-brainer. Like, why would someone not want it? But I mean, still, we, you know, have to go through that process and, you know, bring that latest and new technology, the emerging technologies, and, you know, work with them to build that trust, to understand that what their needs are. And then finally, of course, you know, we're running a pilot right now with a large Japanese company, you know, an automobile. And of course, you know, Japanese companies are sometimes very risk averse in certain areas and very high on security. But of course, you can't be moving papers around in 2024 for getting approval on a certain machinery or giving access to, you know, certain even IT softwares. And, you know, we're like, guys, there's got to be a better way. And that's what we're, you know, helping them with. So I think these are lessons that can apply across the board. You know, from your answers, I feel like, you know, our audience can apply these in, you know, a variety of different ways. What about, let's talk about like sourcing materials and components, you know, for these innovative technologies. You know, you talked about the logistics nightmare that happened during the pandemic. And of course, after that as well, the geopolitical issues, it just always comes up in my discussions when I'm having with the Suez Canal and, you know, the wars that are going on everywhere. So for you in industries like water purification, how do you navigate the complexities of sourcing materials and components for, you know, these technologies?
Yeah, good question. You know, it's with water purification, it isn't all that much different than some of the other areas where we've done some complex sourcing, right? You have a mix of maybe specialty designed items. You have maybe items that you're going to commercially buy off the shelf. You might have like coatings or chemicals. You might have power supplies, electronics. But, you know, for us, part of it is where can we have the best, you know, supply chain or best partners where appropriate? Where are we going to keep the logistics and kind of do the vetting and due diligence to get lowest costs while making sure we have done the due diligence and we have the right, the right supplier there. Also, then thinking about our secret sauce, right? What do we do? What is important to us? And making sure we think about intellectual property risks. Who is going to make those, you know, confidential components or coatings, and how do we make sure we understand and think about that holistically? And then, of course, just making sure it all comes together, and where is that assembly and manufacturing going to take place, and how are we going to hedge our bets against, you know, long lead times, and making sure we can get the customer cycle times we need, which is, again, another challenge, I think, around or challenge and opportunity probably for AI, right? As you think about adopting new technologies, we don't know always, are we going to sell, you know, 3 large skids, or are we going to sell 100 large skids? And then how do we map that out? And so where we can scale up as appropriate, making sure we're getting the best cost, we're using sustainable suppliers, where picking the right people, we understand, you know, the different aspects of, you know, code of conduct and due diligence and different things that are really important to our business. So make sure that everyone's abiding by same EHS protocols that we would.
Agree.
Safety. Yeah.
Ian, So, of course, cost is important in any type of a supplier relationship, but I feel like it's also at times like the overall risk and the cost, because at times there may be material that's available in certain parts of the world, but then, you know, you have intellectual property, you know, getting stolen risk, or there may be some other disruptions along the way, and it may be better to just source it locally or near shore. And, you know, so I think that's definitely super important. And of course, you know, using AI for everything, I'm so passionate about, you know, all of the new amazing things that can now be done, and, you know, not just limited to route planning, not just limited to, I mean, of course, you know, in manufacturing, preventative maintenance, which I'd love to learn more about how, you know, you're utilizing that. And I think these are just very few examples, because everything in the next 2 to 3 years, we have an opportunity to make more efficient and change. But of course, no one knows the pace at which the change is going to come. But I think it's really amazing to see some of the solutions that are being made. And I think it's good that you're, you know, always thinking about that, you know, in digital transformation terms, and including, you know, the complexities around sourcing materials and components for these types of technologies. What about transportation industry? Because I know transportation industry is undergoing significant changes with like initiatives to decarbonize and electrify. Of course, you've had experience in, you know, that role as well at your previous role with that startup. How do you see these trends shaping the future of transportation, and what role can technology play in accelerating these changes?
Honestly, I have had this theme around decarbonization, electrification throughout my career, and was fortunate enough to work on some of the large initiatives through our company globally at TPI Composites. So very near and dear to my heart, but certainly the battery technology and battery technologies have been improving. So think about that in terms of electric vehicles. You know, when I first worked on these technologies back in 2009, you know, to where they are now, right? Ranges of cars and charging is much quicker, and the infrastructure for charging is much better. You think about electric buses and electric delivery vehicles going around, which are, you know, reducing the emissions around in cities and all over. Also thinking about, how mobility plays a part, how electric bikes play a part, how on-demand cars play a part. There's just a lot more, and interlaying that with resiliency of cities, right? You know, working in the water space, much more in tune of, you know, different startup companies looking at, okay, how are we putting sensors on the roadways, and how are you thinking about a smart city overall? And then the resiliency of that, how that plays in, you know, if there's water flooding, you know, where's the traffic? How do you map this out and know if an issue is going to occur before you have the major issue, and then people are reporting on the major issue? So really thinking about that overall, connected vehicles, and how, you know, just the devices and the data that comes. So with that, there's obviously a lot of ethics questions that we could dive into as well, but there's a lot there, and there's a lot that I would say everyone's working on around innovations, and it continues to be key around innovation and collaboration, and thinking of private companies, technologies, and then thinking about public sort of cities and towns and what they're doing to play a role in policy to really advance this and move it forward.
Totally. And it's so critical that it's not just the cities here in the United States, but also across the globe, because it impacts everybody. I mean, the climate change is such a thing that you need collaboration across the board. Imagine that, even in Delhi, we have electric buses. And of course, the air quality is like 400 plus. I mean, it's the worst, you know, that you can imagine, to the point that a lot of people have, challenges with, you know, COPD and other asthma-related challenges. And then, in fact, when you go out running, because we have an office in Gurgaon, which is, you know, close to Delhi. And when you go out running, I mean, you may be doing more harm than, you know, doing an exercise. So I think that initiative is really good of electrification and decarbonizing. I also maybe saw it in the news, like there are roads, infrastructure where while the bus is going or while the car is going, it can charge itself as well. I think, yeah. You know, I'm looking forward to that. You know, where it goes and when it can be done at scale. I think, and of course, all of us in transportation are looking for those autonomous, you know, fully autonomous. I mean, fine, my Tesla works. And yes, it, you know, at times asks me to take back the control or disengages, as they say, and then I can record a feedback. But I think hopefully soon, and I don't know when, but that time would come that when it can be fully autonomous, and especially for the transportation industry, because I mean, that's, you know, that would bring down costs, of course, you know, and of course help the environment. So I'm really looking forward to that happening. I mean, hopefully not in too distant a future.
That's right. You're right. And it brings down the carbon footprint overall, right? If your goods and services are coming on public transportation that's electrified or through electric vehicles, absolutely.
Totally. Yeah. What about some of the trends that are dominating the industrial landscape, and how do you anticipate these trends shaping the future of manufacturing, supply chain, and transportation? Like, if you want to talk about, you know, like broader, not just in transportation, but across the board, like in manufacturing, what do you see are some of the latest and greatest technologies that our viewers can know and learn about?
Oh, the latest and greatest. you know, as you were talking at first, I was immediately thinking of some of the stuff just around, you know, all the data, right? So we collect a ton of data on our systems. So our systems are at deployed, just, you know, destroying PFAS or doing water cleanup, water remediation projects deployed at multiple sites, and that ability to pull the data in and analyze the process data and look at data right immediately. And then you can understand and anticipate things around maintenance and how often do you need to do any kind of maintenance, predictive maintenance, preventative maintenance. So, you know, that's one area, I think. And this type of data analysis, you might say, well, some of this has always been there, but you can do it that much quicker and you predict it that much better. So that's one of the things that we're definitely seeing. And that is increased, you know, customer satisfaction and uptime and all of those things. So just higher reliability for solutions overall. Totally. If you think about
maintenance, is huge, of course. You know, and I think you're right that it's been there, but it's not been available to everybody, like to smaller manufacturing companies or, you know, other medium-sized sectors. Like, and the cost of it has been much higher. And that's why I think, like, making it available at mass scale. So definitely preventive maintenance is an important trend, but please continue, go on. What else?
You know, one of the other ones I'm pretty excited about is some of the stuff around sustainability and what we can do around things about waste and emissions and counting, you know, if you look at carbon footprint or gallons of waste that you reduced or other emissions, anything you can do that kind of real time collects that data and again can help make most informed decisions and can cascade that up to customers and to cities and towns that have some real initiatives and be able to show how that impacts people's lives. I think that is going to be a really important use of that real-time data.
Totally. So marrying everything with sustainability is just so important. I was, you know, on another episode of this podcast, that was like the main topic as well on, you know, sustainability and how it not only, of course, helps all of us and the future generations, but it also, like, for the organization as well, gets the best people to align and come work for you. I mean, it's just so important to rally the troops around that common goal that has not just commercial profits that are pointing inwards, but also, doing good. Because, you know, we all want to do good besides obviously getting our paychecks. We want to do good. And just, I think that's extremely important. So I like that trend, that any ideas, so the audience that's listening, any ideas that could help eliminate waste, decarbonize, reduce emissions, I think those are going to be like very important, because in the strategy, even at the government's level, there are some very important goals that different countries are setting for themselves as well. And I think we got to, hold each other accountable for, those important innovations that need to happen in this industry. In fact, even, in manufacturing, the processes that you employ, they have to, really be the best. Well, good deal. So I guess my last question for you would be, as we are seeing our world is changing so fast, there's disruptive technologies and, traditional businesses are getting disrupted and these business models are getting invented, like the new ones. What advice would you give to aspiring leaders and young entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I think to figure out kind of what your mission is, what your core values are, where you want to go, kind of think with that end in mind, and then really go after it. And just keep asking questions, stick with it, learn, figure out, what is it, what industry do you want to disrupt? What legacy do you want to leave? And start to ask those questions, and then figure it out and really go after it. Some of the stuff we're working on out of Clarity, it's very innovative, but some of it is tied in stuff that's been around for decades, and it's just utilizing it in a new way to solve a new problem, or a problem that's been around, but maybe newly is recognized we need to do something about. And so then how do we bring others on board with us, right? Engage our workforce, kind of get the community involved, get the, partnerships, private, public partnerships, and get the stakeholders, figure out the customer needs and really bring it forward. So for new entrepreneurs or younger generations, or just advice in general, I would say, think about what you want to do and really, really go after it, and then just keep continuously improving and continue to learn, continue to, align yourself and work with other great people that are on that journey with you, going after that same cause and really trying to make that same impact.
Lovely. Great advice. Do what you love and go at it and be resilient. This is fantastic. As we wrap up this enlightening episode of Decoding the Industrial Revolution, I hope you've been as inspired as I have by Pamela's insights. Her journey from enhancing global supplier quality to spearheading innovations in water technology exemplifies how strategic leadership and a commitment to sustainability, more importantly, can drive meaningful change in our industrial landscape. Until next time, stay curious, keep innovating, and remember that each step towards improvement, no matter how small, contributes to a larger transformative impact. Goodbye.